Before long, we'll be where it would have taken mankind millions of years of learning to reach.
And what will Mitchell learn on getting there? Will he know what to do with his power?
That's the big agenda here, is undermining the whole idea of journalism, and that's the real thing to worry about.
The good old Ministry of Truth has another outlet.
Too often, broadcast radio insults your intelligence instead of respecting it, improving it, challenging it. But not here. Where knowledge is power, this is Powerful Radio. This is 30 minutes of information and inspiration. This is the Ministry of Truth. Hello and welcome to the Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Stjepanchik. On today's show, we'll feature a monologue of updates of the panic of 2009 among commercial broadcast television stations, considering what's true, what's not, what's between the lines, and what this means for everyday people. But now, a collection of news about media and democracy from the show Media Minutes.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news related to media and democracy. I'm Stevie Converse.
And I'm Candace Clement.
After Glenn Beck of Fox News called President Barack Obama a racist and claimed that the president had a, quote, deep-seated hatred of white people, the nonprofit organization Color of Change began calling on advertisers to stop airing their commercials on Beck's show. As of this writing, 57 advertisers have pulled their ads, including Geico, Procter & Gamble, Applebee's, and General Mills. Danny McLean is the campaign manager for Color of Change.
What's troubling is that Glenn Beck presents himself as a journalist. You know, he has this show on Fox News Network, ostensibly a news outlet. And I think what was just so over the top about his comments about President Obama was it has no basis in fact. You know, usually we expect commentary or news analysis to be based on some reported actual news, something that has a basis in fact, and that's just not the case here.
The problem goes deeper than a single remark, says McLean, pointing to Beck's pattern of fear-mongering and scapegoating. And she says that type of rhetoric may be more dangerous in troubled economic times.
People are facing foreclosure. People are going into bankruptcy because of sky-high health care costs. And there are a lot of Americans that are feeling very insecure and very afraid. And if they haven't yet quite gotten used to the fact that we have a black president, they are quick to scapegoat. And really, that's what Glenn Beck is doing, is trying to kind of whip up these racial fears.
Color of Change was founded in the wake of the poor government response to the devastation of Hurricane Katrina 4 years ago. What started out as a personal email list has grown into a force of more than 600,000 people across the country who are engaged in Gulf Coast recovery, police accountability, and media justice work. McLean emphasizes that Color of Change's campaigning is not an attempt to silence the right wing or curtail freedom of speech.
This campaign is very narrowly focused on Glenn Beck, and we really feel that Glenn Beck is the worst of the worst when it comes to these so-called pundits that have this privately funded, very large megaphone and use that platform to tell lies and then want to pass those lies off as journalism. These people who are trying to make this a free speech issue, that is so off the wall. You know, free speech provisions are about the government challenging someone's right to express their opinions, and that's not what's happening here. If people on the right want to say that we're trying to banish their perspective, that's incorrect, but we aren't going to stand by as someone consistently race baits and tries to whip up racial fears. We're not going to stand by quietly and take that.
For more information about Color of Change, go to colorofchange.org.
Late last week, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit threw out a Federal Communications Commission rule designed to protect consumers from media consolidation in the cable market. The rule had stated that a company could not own more than 30% of the total market nationwide. Corey Wright, policy counsel for Free Press, describes the history behind the ownership caps.
In 1992, Congress passed the Cable Act, which instructed the commission to ensure that consumers had access to competition and choice and diversity of programming. And they asked the commission to accomplish this by capping the number of subscribers that a single cable company could reach, basically a percentage of the market. In the decision that came down on Friday, the commission basically was told by the D.C. Circuit that its 30% cap was no good, and the court threw it out. And this is actually the second time that the court has done that.
The suit was brought against the FCC in 2007 by Comcast and the National Cable and Telecommunications Association. In last week's ruling, the court called the 30% cap arbitrary and capricious and stated that it failed to consider other competitors to cable TV like satellite providers. The court's decision came down as the agency was in the midst of its own annual review of video competition. Free Press filed comments last week with the FCC about the current state of competition in the cable market.
In spite of the fact that cable operators have increasing revenues, they're investing less in infrastructure that would improve the experience for consumers. And even though cable companies are seeing increased profits, consumers are seeing increased prices.
Despite the court's decision, the battle over diversity in the cable market is not over.
The FCC has to create a rule. It's been instructed by Congress to do it. The fact that the court threw it out doesn't mean that it gets to just ignore it and not pass some form of ownership cap. So they're going to either have to go back to the drawing board and create a new rule, or they may be considering asking the Supreme Court to review the D.C. Circuit's decision and maybe seeing what can happen in that venue.
You've been listening to Media Minutes, a production of Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization working to reform the media. For more information, visit freepress.net.
You're listening to The Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Stepinchik. We now feature a monologue of updates of the panic of 2009 among commercial broadcast television stations, considering what's true, what's not, what's between the lines, and what this means for everyday people. The following monologue was recorded on Saturday, September 5th, 2009. I don't normally use a pun in my monologues on the radio, but in this case I will to start off with a discussion about the commercial broadcast television industry in the United States and its long-term prospects. Here's the pun. Everyone's heard about the corporate newspaper industry in the United States, and it has gotten all the headlines. You can stop laughing. The headlines are basically over the future prospects, or perhaps lack thereof, of the newspaper industry in the United States, where the internet has been taking a chunk out of newspaper profits. A number of prominent newspaper companies have shuttered entirely or have filed for bankruptcy, with their future prospects perhaps not all that great. That's been getting a lot of attention, but not getting as much attention, hardly at all, but probably what's facing worse circumstances, with the potential here for some perhaps possible positive developments, is the commercial broadcast television industry in the United States, which is probably, in at least I think, in worse shape than that of the newspaper industry in the United States. If we're to believe the corporate media business press upon analysis of this, and I'll be reading from a post that's been made to the website of a group I'm a part of, Chicago Media Action, online at chicagomediaaction.org, you will see some of the links and also some of the commentary of what I'll be sharing now here. So if you were to believe the corporate media business press, that the commercial corporate television industry in the United States is in full-blown panic about their future prospects, consider these developments. Development number one, organizational and financial predicament. We've noted, and others have noted, that the collapse of advertising in commercial television in the past year, roughly to about August 2008 on, although you can probably draw parallels, not quite parallels, but an extension of that, perhaps going all the way back to mid-2007, perhaps. There's a collapse of advertising, and that's a big deal because that is the overwhelming majority of the incoming funding stream for commercial broadcasting. That's been drying up. It's not as been robust, and this actually might be something else we'll talk about, but nonetheless, it's not as robust as it had once been. And as a result of this, leading industry financiers and people within the media business community have been thinking what have thought to be long unthinkable thoughts. In fact, that includes abandoning commercial broadcasting altogether and moving to cable. They've been actually floating this as a possibility, not to say that it's going to happen, but it's been talked about. The financial situation in the short term regarding commercial television broadcasting in the United States is undeniably getting worse. A number of examples of statistics. The Sinclair Broadcasting Group. This is a cookie-cutter model along the lines of Clear Channel for Radio Sinclair tried to implement regarding broadcasting. And they were particularly effective at this and particularly notorious at this. There are no Sinclair broadcasters in Chicago. There are, I believe, at least one, possibly two in Illinois. And they were regarded as a longtime mover and shaker or up-and-comer as far as media concentration was concerned. But now it looks like that so the Sinclair Broadcasting Group is on the verge of bankruptcy. To quote a post from the Hollywood Reporter that was reposted on the Benton Foundation's website at benton.org, Sinclair Broadcasting Group, which owns or operates 58 television stations in 35 U.S. markets, said slow political advertising and a drop in auto advertising, along with a recent downgrade of company debt, will make it difficult to meet certain financial obligations. Since it last year, the company lost $241 million on revenue of $756 million. Sinclair faces debt covenant violations, sagging revenues, and cash flow that may make it impossible to service that debt, and what could be contentious negotiations with ABC over its affiliation agreement, which expires at year's end. So Sinclair is under bad circumstances, and that's one thing. Another media advisory group, BAI is its name, says that they're predicting a 15% drop in television station revenues this year. And what's worse is that the current serious recession that we're facing in, which came very close to a full-blown depression, is drying up international TV markets. That could amount to billions of dollars, perhaps as much as $7 billion of international TV sales. And what's more, the main industry organizational leaders, the National Association of Broadcasters and the Television Bureau of Advertising, are currently leaderless. The president of the NAB, a gentleman named David Rare, resigned earlier this year, and they haven't found a successor for him. Likewise, the Television Bureau of Advertisers president has actually also left. So this is one series of circumstances that's a problem here, the organization and financial predicament. Second problem is that other industries are writing commercial television's obituary. Probably the leading writer of this, at least as far as grabbing headlines, has been Steve Ballmer, who happens to be the CEO of Microsoft. He actually declared a death knell not just for commercial television, but for all of traditional media. There was one particular article in The Guardian of London. To quote from that, Steve Ballmer, Microsoft chief executive, said that the global advertising economy has permanently, quote, reset, unquote, at a lower level, warning that media companies should not plan for revenues to bounce back to pre-recession levels. Ballmer argued that traditional broadcast and print media would have to plan business models around a smaller share of the advertising market as revenues continue to move to digital outlets. What's more, a blog called The Wrap, which is a kind of big-name Hollywood insider blog, actually wrote a post that deemed television as we know it, quote, finished, and actually quoted one authority who expected the demise of perhaps one or two television networks within the next 5 years. So other industries are basically already kind of salivating at the potential prospects of television's demise. And what's more, the industry themselves are releasing statements that kind of speak to a panic almost. Now, that's just not to say that this hasn't happened before. In fact, the corporate media has had a history of talking through both sides of their mouth. And it's been noted that these pronouncements will basically say, and sometimes even in public testimonial before Congress, let's say, that things are horrible, and yet other statements that will be made to investors will say, no, things are just fine. And you'll find statements actually like that of Jeff Zucker, who's an executive at NBC, who declared that things are going to be just fine and things have bottomed out, to quote his words. Plus, what's more, income tends to be lower in odd-numbered years, like in 2009, since there you don't really have a major electoral season and thus no influx of electoral ads. And you also don't have the Olympics, which occur in even-numbered years, and all of the ad coverage and related funding that's connected with the Olympics. But that said, in recent months, the commercial television industry's own business press pronouncements do look like their lives are in danger, or at least they're talking about it like that. To quote a couple of instances of this, TV News Check, news commercial television news website, actually had a conversation with a gentleman named Gene Loving of Max Media, a company that buys television and radio stations and then repackages them in the hopes of selling them off for a profit. But that's not very easy in the current economy. And in fact, Loving has actually been saying, and we'll be talking about this in great detail, that the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, quote, has to recognize that the rules they put in place a long time ago are irrelevant today. They ought to eliminate all the ownership restrictions. Yes, all of them. The controversial series of ownership rules that basically prevent companies from monopolizing all of the media in a given community. There are rules in place that have actually worked to basically prevent that from happening. There have been attempts and repeated attempts in recent years, in a great number of years, to weaken them. And in recent years, to eliminate them entirely or weaken them to the point that it's just no point in keeping them at all. They've been stopped because of political activism that's actually made a difference in helping to prevent it from being passed and keeping those rules in place. So there's this sense of panic here that obviously they need to change the corporate re-regulation, or is it termed deregulation, which is kind of a misnomer. There's not really deregulation. Regulation is always going to be in play. The question is, who is it regulating for and towards what purpose? Here it's overwhelmingly been big media companies and regulating toward the profits of their ends. And that's stuff they like. They love regulation that's in favor of goals that they want to achieve. And so here they've basically been pushing amidst this panic, of new panic rather, regarding this collapse of funding streams for commercial broadcast advertising, that they've just been declaring, basically playing the same one-note Wurlitzer as far as broadcasting is concerned. Saying that, oh, we have to change the rules to allow us to consolidate more. And they were just basically repeating that line over and over again for years. There have been times when they came frighteningly close to actually achieving that. But nonetheless, they're doing this push now using the current economic circumstance as the latest justification for the same tune that they've been whistling for lo these many years. In fact, another op-ed that was actually published by a gentleman named Harry Jessel, also published in TV News Check. Should broadcast journalists get involved with government's efforts to save journalism? On the one hand, it may be a good idea for broadcasters to participate. It's a perfect opportunity for them to make the case that consolidation isn't necessarily a bad thing when it comes to journalism, and that outdated ownership restrictions must go. In fact, and somewhat paradoxically, they can argue that consolidation is good for journalism. Newspapers have done their best journalistic work since becoming monopolies or near monopolies. Flush owners are willing to trade dollars for the power and prestige that comes from operating first-rate journalistic enterprises. What's wrecking such papers is the uncontrollable invasion of competition from the internet. They've lost their local and news and classified advertising franchises, and they can't get them back. By contrast, excessive competition seems to bring out the worst in journalism. In broadcasting, it leads to rundowns filled with the lowest common denominator reporting on crimes and fires. In cable, among news networks, it's produced a mad race to the bottom in search of the most viewers. On the other hand, the proceedings could be a trap. Whatever benefits the government grants, the legacy media are likely to come with strings. For every break the FCC grants TV stations, it will want something in return. A larger principle is at stake here. Journalistic organizations simply shouldn't be involved in what will surely lead to some quid pro quo to put them on an economic footing that will depend on the continued beneficence of the government. That's Harry Jessel, requoted on a post of the Benton Foundation, originally posted on the website tvnewscheck.com. And this has basically been the line here. In fact, it actually gets worse. An open letter was actually published by the same guy, Harry Jessel, to the Federal Communications Commission. An open letter to Julius Genachowski, the new chair of the Federal Communications Commission, as appointed by the Obama administration and approved by the Senate. The plea here is save broadcast TV before it's too late. And here he really goes off the rails. We'll want to talk about this in greater length because what he's talking about is very instructive and could lead to a lot of very interesting talking points. But nonetheless, there's this whole line regarding more corporate re-regulation, what they're calling deregulation, to allow for greater media concentration, which all indications are is bad unless you happen to directly financially benefit from it. So that's a problem. That's what they're trying to address. And this letter that we were talking about, an open letter to Genachowski, Harry Jessel, this clown, writes to Julius Genachowski, FCC chair, saying that television station businesses are victims of economic troubles, cutbacks in advertising, and relentless and increasing competition for audience from cable and now the internet. If nothing is done, he warns, broadcasting service will inevitably degrade and trigger a downward rating spiral from which stations may not be able to recover. To ensure that doesn't happen, the FCC needs to take immediate actions to address the troubles of TV broadcasting and take steps to bolster the financial health of the industry. So what's to be done? Well, Harry Jessel lists 12 useful suggested tips for actions that the FCC can take. And we'll talk about these each at length to talk about them and then also to demolish them in turn, because a lot of what he's saying is basically hack. Suggestion number one, place a moratorium on the adoption of rules and regulations that would impose additional burdens on broadcasters. Here, the when you read between the lines, it basically refers to anything public service obligations or anything that broadcasters would have to do where they don't immediately make any money off of. Problem with this is that a lot of the rules that they currently have are so dishwatery thin that there's no real, it's very easy to meet them. And usually they can be done in a way that you're not going to be able to do stuff. You can use stuff that you're not going to be able to make money off of. Classic example, there are obligations for over-the-air television broadcasting stations to have some portion of children's broadcasting. Now, a lot of times that broadcasting can be met with shows that a lot of stations are showing already. Sometimes even very bad cartoons that will appear on Saturday mornings or Sunday mornings. And then broadcasters will put that in as the show that they'll use to meet this obligation of children's broadcasting that they're supposed to meet. Except that the shows usually are very bad, not educational at all, and air on times that you wouldn't be able to make money off of anyway because audiences aren't watching of any appreciable amount during those times. So, and the FCC almost always approves that. And so that's where this attempt to try to place a moratorium on rules and regulations that would impose additional burdens, which basically means don't make us do anything that we can't make money off of, which is baloney because a lot of the things that they're supposedly done in the public interest, which they don't make money off of, they don't make money off of anyway. Suggestion number two, relax the local ownership rules. Well, this is crap too. Local ownership rules are in play and serve as the lone modicum of preventing any kind of rampant consolidation, even more so than we've already seen. And this has been their quick and dirty way of just trying to be able to turn a profit, especially where a lot of these consolidated media companies have basically been chewing off their arm in order to satiate their additional hunger with additional layoffs and cutbacks and basically not talking about anything of substance. In the attempts to try to garner ratings, but nonetheless alienating their own respective audiences, and as a result, losing those audiences that have been going to the internet or to other sources, and trying to achieve some kind of modicum of other coverage by other means. So that's baloney. Suggestion number three, eliminate the newspaper broadcast cross-ownership ban in all markets. This is a key rule that basically prevents a single company from owning a newspaper and a television station in the same city. And this has long been a holy grail of broadcasters and, in fact, of media companies to try to eliminate. Key of this has been the Tribune Company, which basically banked their entire future on the elimination of the newspaper broadcast cross-ownership rule because not only were they using that as their plan to try to become a major player in the media realm across the United States, but they were also already doing that, breaking the law, in effect, with the help of some FCC waivers of key newspaper ownerships in cities across the United States. Now they want to basically eliminate that all over the place. In a lot of ways, that's already happened as a result of the 2007 ruling. But yet, despite that, we still have, in the last year or so, seen this full-blown panic from media industries, newspapers, and radio and television. They're basically screaming that the sky is falling. Suggestion number four, eliminate the FCC policy prohibiting a security interest in FCC licenses. Now, by law, every radio and television station in the United States must be licensed by the FCC to broadcast. Now, there's also an FCC law that says you can't use those FCC licenses as collateral toward a bank. Not allowed. They want to change the rule to basically allow for that. Now, here's the deal. Those licenses basically amount to a humongous financial windfall that broadcasters get tax-free. They've never been taxed on those interests. They basically have used them through the use of advertising as basically money-making machines, tremendous money-making machines. Sometimes selling them will garner value in the hundreds of millions of dollars or more. So, but nonetheless, apparently, despite that freedom and despite that ability, they still nonetheless feel that that's not enough, or that's not meeting the expectations, unrealistically, I think, toward this profit regime that they're setting up. And so they basically want to change it so that the security interest that's currently used isn't allowed. So that's baloney. Suggestion number 5, signal a willingness to grant waivers of the 25% limit on alien ownership of holding companies with stations. Translate this into English. Non-Americans can own no more than 25% of media ownership of holding companies with stations. So you can't, and this is actually a big reason why Rupert Murdoch of News Corporation, who owns Fox, became an American. He was actually born in Australia, and in order to basically get around this regulation, which the FCC wouldn't budge on, Rupert Murdoch renounced his Australian citizenship and became an American citizen. He actually naturalized. Anything is for sale for this guy, including his own birthright, apparently. So, but apparently they want to change this around, so they hope to try to get financial windfall from foreign investors who might want to try to enter into American markets. Okay, but they could just do what Rupert Murdoch did, I guess. Moving on to recommendation number 8, recommend to Congress that it amend the All-Channel Receiver Act to require that all cell phones sold in the U.S. be equipped with a mobile DTV tuner. Now, here's the deal with this. Since the adaptation and the distribution of mobile devices, cell phones, the iPhone, Blackberries, and so forth, that can actually carry some resolution of digital video, they also want to include in, apparently, digital television tuners so that you can watch TV from the digital signals that are over the air through an iPhone, let's say. Problem with that is that a lot of that content you can already get anyway through streaming provider provisions that a lot of shows will watch. And what's more, chances are if you're going to be watching stuff, you're going to be watching it on an on-demand basis anyway. It's very unlikely that, even though this probably will help some people who would want to watch, especially if there's something that happens to be conveniently on at the time that you're using your cell phone or want to watch something, chances are if you're going to be watching something, you're probably going to do it at home. So that's kind of out of the water as well. Number 12 is very interesting of this list of a number of suggested items to do. Announce promptly the FCC's interest to at least consider some or all of the above these recommendations to assure bankers and investors that the industry may soon get some regulatory relief. This is basically a provision to try to get a quick buck, to basically announce this in the hopes that media stock prices will shoot up even for a brief fleeting moment, and investors can, especially media investors, can score a quick buck. But that's patently transparent as just a crass attempt to try to score a quick buck at the expense of FCC regulations, especially where all of these provisos that I've mentioned thus far are at the very least half-baked and somewhat suspicious on their face. So clearly we've seen these circumstances where the commercial broadcast industry has basically been crying Chicken Little regarding their future fate. Now, there's something to be said that circumstances have changed, and maybe it's not just crying that the sky is falling. There may actually be problems here. But if this is all Chicken Little alarmism, why don't they just dump all their broadcast licenses? Moreover, if you can't make money from broadcast, it's not like you can't make money from broadcast advertising, it's just that the amount of money has just gone down to some extent. Now, from an investor's point of view, that's tragic. Even a slight turndown could actually smell like the beginning of the end. It might deter investors' confidence, and that's why they're not going to go into that. Now, investors and investing aside, in fact, that's actually not the point of this. The point is for popular involvement, increasingly so within our media system, especially where for a long time there hasn't been very much, if at all, of public involvement within decisions that shape the media system. There's that sense of panic and loss of confidence in the commercial broadcasting sector that wasn't there, even if just a year ago. and even where it's now very much widespread. We've seen these little pinpricks of instances that have actually been building up over time regarding the fate of the commercial broadcast industry. This could lead to opportunities for community activists and activists who work on media issues to exploit, to help to gain for future media developments. And there are some suggestions of what I might do, and this is actually something I'll probably work on pursuing in future episodes of the Ministry of Truth. So we should keep our toes in developments of this and get our own policies that to be ready to push when the moment is ripe. What policies would we push? That will be something I'll discuss on future episodes. Listen to all past episodes of the Ministry of Truth online at www.szcz.org. That concludes this episode of the Ministry of Truth. Special thanks to Mario and the staff of WHPK Radio in Chicago. Thank you for listening.